Support for Boston Public Radio comes from the Boston Foundation, believing that when we close opportunity gaps, we can build a greater Boston. TBF partners with other leaders to move equity forward. TBF. Move equity. Move Boston. TBF.org. And Safety Insurance, offering auto insurance policies designed to help for when the worst happens. You can ask an independent agent about safety insurance. Safety Insurance. We'll help you manage life's storms.
Welcome, Corby.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Marjorie.
There's this fabulous piece that you really got to go look at because online, but we'll try to do our best because it's great sound stuff. Talking about noise in restaurants, which we've talked to you about in the past. I remember living in New York City, and there was a bar that I really liked near where I lived on the Upper West Side for a brief period of time. And they had that kind of ceiling. I know this is not unusual for you. It was for me at the time, which the material, whatever it was, copper or something, was intentionally intended to reflect the sound from the restaurant and make it louder because they thought that people liked that when they were eating.
Yeah, that's the reason, right, that we always heard.
So what's the deal? Give us a summary of what the Washington Post is doing in this massive piece.
Well, first of all, let's credit Tom Sitsuma, who since 2008 has been bringing a noise meter. And in his restaurant reviews, he will give decibel ratings because the number one complaint to him as a restaurant critic is noisy restaurants. To the entire Zagat National Survey, number one complaint, and on Yelp, is noisy restaurants. A number of tidbits in this: dinner out at a formerly extremely noisy restaurant in Washington with Sitsuma, the restaurant critic, with a woman who'd been the head of the Acoustic Association of America and has lots of awards, talking about the technique of being able to remediate sound. Is there were a number of things about noisy restaurants stimulating alcohol ordering.
I was shocked by that.
Getting people out faster, having to eat more food, partly because, and eat the food faster because they can't converse. They can't really hear who they're talking to. It's a confusing and difficult environment for them. And so the more of these facts that piled up in the article, the more I thought, well, it's in the restaurant owner's interest to keep the noise up.
Okay, so here's a little sound of the bustling Peruvian restaurant. When I mispronounce it, Corby, please help me. Pisco y Nazca, is that right?
I think so. I've been to that restaurant.
Okay, all right. Yeah, this is in D.C. Here's a little sound. I mean, you can't hear anything except the sound. I mean, you can't hear nothing. I mean, and by the way, what they do, which is brilliant, is they do the decibel level, if you click on it, of like a normal conversation, the decibel level at a normal restaurant, and then a little higher. And so you get a sense of what you're encountering when you go to all these kinds of restaurants. It's a great story.
Look at what our staff member Zoe
said. That was Zoe.
Yeah. She said she turned 30 last November, and she can no longer hang out in a noisy bar or restaurant. She puts earplugs in at the movie theater. You know, that's a good one, too, because if you go to the movie theaters, you see the previews of these action films. It's so loud. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
I mean, right. Oppenheimer, where they play the sound effects and music much louder than the dialogue. And they did that deliberately. Some of the good advice Tom Sitsuma has is go early so you don't get there at the and he you know, sort of begs restaurants to have booths and to sit away.
You know, I have one question. You mentioned this. In the piece, they mentioned that alcohol, there seems to be a direct correlation between how noisy it is and the level of your alcohol consumption. Is that what I wasn't clear about? Is there like a physiological, at this point, not the right word, connection? Or is it just because the noise is so loud, you want to try to kill it? Because apparently when you drink, I wasn't aware of this either, your hearing gets worse. Is that what's the reason?
They don't know.
Okay.
It was a number of factoids that said the mechanism isn't really understood. But the whole idea of drunk people yelling, it's because they don't hear themselves as well. I didn't know that alcohol blunted hearing, and that's embarrassing and loud.
Okay, so staying in trends, I guess, maybe, because as goes California, as they say, there's this bill in the legislature in California that would allow customers to sue restaurants because of fees. They're being called junk fees these days. And I have to say, I mean, I don't like – hidden fees where you don't know until you get the check. But it seems to me it also would allow you to sue even if they disclose the fees. If they say we add X percent for, back of the house, we add a 20% gratuity to parties of six or more so that you don't screw the servers. As long as you're telling people what the deal is, why should that be litigatable, if that's a word, Corby Kummer?
Because this new law, and I read this story three times to try to get these California trends, because indeed, as California goes, the idea of the law, it covers many industries like car rentals, like hotels, like places that advertise one fee and then have tacked on so many extra charges they haven't talked about that it is 1.5 to 2 times as much when you finally give them your credit card at the end. So that's all good. I think we want to know about fees. The underlying problem restaurants face is, so what this forces restaurants to do is just jack up the menu prices so they don't have to add on a service fee, a 20% service fee that people, that restaurant diners are angry about and they're confused by. This is happening everywhere where you see a 3 to 20% service fee, like, I get to tip one and if I want to, but what are you doing imposing this charge on me without telling me? That's a justification for the law. What restaurant owners are saying is that their customers will rebel at the menu prices that actually will allow them to pay their servers a decent living and even break even and meet the higher inflated food costs, the higher labor costs, all the things they need to be able to meet, they need to be able to charge diners to do. So there's this fundamental disconnect between the reality of restaurant owners and what diners will and will not accept in terms of menu prices.
My experience, I haven't read any research on this, and I'm sure you have it in your head. Large parties, if you don't have an 18 or 20% or whatever it is, service charge built in, my experience with cheap friends.
Well, they usually do when you're six and over.
I'm just saying, but this would be elite. You could sue a restaurant if that's my point. And it seems to me when you have a lot of people and the bill gets really big, hundreds of dollars kind of thing, when it's not really big per person, it's because you have a lot of people. The mindset is, well, I'm giving them $100, even though it's only 12%. It seems like a lot of money. So this would preclude a restaurant, unless they want to get sued, by adding a built-in gratuity, even if they disclose it, as I said, for large parties, which seems totally unfair to the servers to me.
And also, apparently, servers work longer for fewer tips when there's a large table. Sort of their hands are tied, literally, and so they can't make as much money because the volume is less. So it makes all the sense in the world to impose a fee. But this law is a blunt weapon. It applies to many industries, and it applies to all restaurant charges. In the other restaurant piece we were talking about Washington trends, the idea of restaurants don't want six people is because they arrive not at the same time.
That's another good point.
And they leave not at the same time.
Point.
The restaurant has said, we can't keep this real estate. You got to go. People don't go when they're in large groups. So big tables, which we like every so often for friends and reunions, are a big problem for restaurants.
We're talking to Corby Kummer.
Corby, this next story about Massachusetts food costs rising and residents go hungry. The statistics were unbelievable. Around 1.9 million adults in Massachusetts, I think we have about 6 million people in Massachusetts. Is it 7? Okay.
Right.
Went hungry last year. And people who qualify for low-income help with food, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, most people call it SNAP, the recipients right here in Massachusetts say their benefits only cover half the month of their food budget. So we've got a massive problem here.
I started pointing at the screen as you talked about the statistics because I was horrified by them and horrified at my ignorance. As soon as I read that the entire state had, I think, 34% of people who said they were food insecure, what does that mean? In the course of a month, they worry about not having enough money to buy enough food or running out of food. And that it was 32.3%, 33% in the last 2 years. Why did I not know this? You know, a third of the entire state's population. It's been a years long trend. And then for Suffolk, Bristol,
this
and
is
Hampshire
incredible.
Counties, more than 45%.
Half the people
reported deficient access to meals. That means walking down the street, almost half of everyone you see doesn't feel they have enough food or secure about having access to enough food in the course of a month. That's a very shocking statistic.
You know what's really interesting to me? It is shocking statistic. Is one thing that I'm embarrassed to say I never thought about until we heard about potential famine in Gaza is the long-term impact, not just the immediate impact on food insecurity for kids in particular, and how you don't make up for it, even if it turns out you're not food insecure in X number of years. And the second thing that stuck out to me in this is only a really small amount of money would make a huge difference in most people's budget. Despite the inflation and grocery costs, the X numbers of dollars, short money, would move them from food insecure to not being, you know, in great shape, but at least having decent diets, which really argues strongly for so many of the programs that you advocate for, Corby Comer.
Yeah, we saw that during the pandemic, the sudden increase in children's programs and school lunches and child tax credit.
Yeah.
Child tax credit. It lifted millions of people out of poverty for not that much money. Another statistic, a good one that I found in this piece, is school lunch. Yeah. And the idea that 74% now of food insecure children who otherwise reported skipping meals are going hungry for a full day. Now elect to receive free lunch, up from 5 years ago, just 27%, three times.
We should praise the legislature, because we're always trashing the state legislature. This is in the Globe, by the way. The fact that they made that school lunch program permanent. And the impact that it has on kids is really huge.
But you know what I was thinking, Corby, too? Not just that food prices have gone up by 7%. This is a greater Boston, it's a big jump. The Globe this morning had a piece, I think it was this morning, maybe it was yesterday morning, all the towns around Massachusetts and the housing costs, how they jumped. And you got to figure that it's a double whammy.
That's what they say in this piece. Yeah. That's why they're food insecure.
Everything is so expensive around here. I know you just praised the legislature, and that was very nice. But where is the governor's bill?
Well, she just filed it a couple of months ago. They still have a month. I'm not exactly a defender of the legislature, but they have 2 months to do this. They can't pass it overnight, right? I mean, she just filed in January, didn't she?
Well, I think it's June. Okay. I mean, this is an emergency.
I agree with that.
I think we can move a little bit more quickly. They were basically not in session last week.
Well, that's a good point, actually. So I take back what I said. So before you go, unfortunately, this is used to be at least a decent part of the, quote, nutrition, and I use the term loosely, for low-income people. Apparently, fast food places are pricing themselves out of the market, so they're thinking of doing short-term deals, you know, $5 McDonald's thing where you get a McNuggets, whatever. I have to make an admission, and I'm embarrassed to do this. I do go to McDonald's down the block on Western Avenue, and I don't go often, maybe once a week or two. And what I always get, I get the exact same thing. For $4.99, you get a six-piece McNuggets, and I can't believe I'm saying this, and either a McChicken or a McDouble. So Zoe's looking at me like I'm a fool.
What's a McDouble?
It's a double cheeseburger.
Double cheeseburger.
And the good news is it's only like 8,000 calories, too, so it's really good. Jamie just wrote once a week. Oh, my God. Actually, maybe it's not once a week. Whatever.
It's every day,
So the fact that exists there, and in the article we read says, I think it was in the New York Times, these discount things have to be short term or the restaurants really screw themselves in terms of people buying the loss leaders. So when I have something like that's permanent, that's because it's a locally owned franchise and they decide to make their own special deal. Is that what it is?
Right. What struck me in this is I was thinking, boy, McDonald's, which needs to get market share after the pandemic, is imposing money losing options on all of its franchisees. Is that Wendy's or Burger King? It said Burger King franchise operators agreed to serve a $5 meal, and that Burger King and the other chains put this up for a vote among their franchisees, because we've recently been reading about Red Lobster. I keep wanting to call it red carpet. failing partly because it imposes endless shrimp debacle in which restaurant owners and franchise owners had to lose money. In that case, they were mandating that the franchise owners buy the shrimp from the owner of the entire restaurant chain that had shrimp farms. But this is the first time since way before the pandemic, 2018, that McDonald's has been emphasizing the $4.99 value. Jim, there's no excuse for you doing this once a week
I didn't mean once.
We're going to shame you forever. And yet, when I read about the amount of food that's available in these restaurants for $4.99, which are hamburgers, which are nuggets, which are fries, a soft drink, and either a McDouble hamburger
it's or good for you too.
Sandwich, I thought, you know, if you parcel that out in a family of four, you might have, you know, decent and economical meals, even if they're not particularly nutritious, they're cheap.
By the way, Zoe and Jamie, two of our colleagues, wrote this to us. Jim cooks fish three times a week. The rest of the week, he's at the McDonald's on Western Avenue or at Coney Island Hot Dogs in Worcester or eating a sausage of the month from Marjorie. Been nice knowing you, Jim. I don't eat that. It's like a snack kind of thing. I mean, it's not like my meal.
It's 1,000 calories and it's only a snack.
Well, by the way, I don't eat the whole thing. I mean, it's not cheap. You just have a couple of McNuggets. Okay. What's your favorite sauce on the McNuggets like you've ever had a McNugget?
But let me support you, Jim, because in meal recall essays, which is what a lot of studies of people's nutrition and diets are, they lie. Jim is telling the truth. Let's reinforce his truth telling here.
You know, you are a totally beautiful person. Do you know that?
Said,
I mean that.
He just said.
In the most loving way.
He goes and gets a McDouble at McDonald's and doesn't finish it, and he's telling the truth? I don't think so.
A McDouble and 6-piece McNuggets with hot mustard sauce. It's $4.99.
Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't have brought that up. Corby, it's great to see you. Be well. See you soon.
Thank you, Corby. Thanks for listening to the Best of Boston Public Radio podcast from GBH. Our crew is Zoe Matthews, Aidan Conley, Nicole Garcia, Hannah Loss. Our engineer is John the Claw Parker. Our executive producer is Jamie Bologna. You want to hear the full show? Download our full show podcast or tune in to 89.7 GBH 11 to 2 each weekday.
Today's episode was produced by Zoe Matthews.